This is episode 53, I believe, and we have a special guest. So obviously we already did like I said, I always have to get used to that. We're pre-recording the intros, but we're here with, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I am Chicago's very own Big Don. Don
Gray. I love it.
Big Don. So Don, how's the fam and how's everything going so far with all this craziness going on?
It is crazy. You know, like we said, the family is doing well. The boys, everybody has cabin fever. You know, the boys are, you know, one of my kids is anxious to go back to school and the other one is happy with just being at home doing online school. So
the differences.
Yeah. And it kind of sucks a little bit because, you know, we can't be here with them while they're at school to help them along and make sure they're doing their studies correctly, because me and my wife both have jobs. And so when we get home, we got to go back, you know, Dayla has to go back and check homework and see assignments that we're missing. So it's kind of crazy right now, but we're making it through.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that you guys are doing, you know, pretty good and that everyone's, you know, safe and healthy and that you guys are still around. Cause some people, you know, they're not as fortunate as we are. So.
Exactly. We had at the radio station, we had a little scare. So we all had got tested and everybody came back negative. So it's all good.
Good. That's good to hear. So, Andrew, go ahead and take over for a second here.
All right. So we always do a segment where I ask you a question. Do you know, on the Hot 100, Billboard Hot 100, the number one song on the date of your birth, of the week of your birth, I suppose?
Wow. Okay, so no, I do not. So it was 68, so I'm guessing maybe it was Motown or something, maybe.
I'll give you the top five.
Okay, do that.
All right, so number five was Hold Me Tight, Johnny Nash.
Mm-hmm.
Number four was Magic Carpet Ride,
Steppenwolf,
my bad. Mm-hmm. Number three was Diana Ross and the Supremes, Love Child. Number two was Mary Hopkin, Those Were the Days.
Okay.
And number one was The Beatles, Hey wow. Jude.
Yeah, Hey Jude.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
And then, so the other part of the segment is basically, they say that the song that was number one on your 14th birthday is supposed to be the song that defines your life. So I'm just going to do a little countdown here. I don't know from where he's going to start. And basically, you can tell us once we get to number one, if that song does define your life. And if you have commentary on any of the other songs, you can give us that too.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to give you top five as well. I got Neil Diamond, Heartlight. This is in 1982.
Okay. This is 14th birthday, right?
14th, yeah.
Okay.
Laura Branigan, Gloria. Mm. Number three, Olivia Newton-John, Heart Attack.
Wow.
Number two was Lionel Richie, Truly.
Wow.
And number one was Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warnes, Up Where We Belong. I don't know that song.
I know the song, and it's a great song. Let's go with that. I'm up where I belong right now. So.
You're on my couch.
I'm up where I belong in my life with my family, and everything is going great. So yeah, I'm up where I belong.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great to hear.
Well, I like that answer too. So, Don, so like you said, you're obviously not from here. So where are you originally from?
Originally from Chicago, Illinois. Me and the family moved here October of 2014. Just to get a better life for our kids and get away from the snow.
We
don't like the cold weather anymore. Chicago is not, you know, the great city that it used to be when we were growing up, so we had to get away from that. And the only regret that I have is that I had not moved to Arizona sooner.
So
we love it out here.
I was wondering if it's true, like on days where it's like extremely cold in Chicago, and like say you live up on a high rise or whatever, and you can open the window and throw water out of the window and it'll freeze. Is that true?
It has to be extremely, extremely cold. Like one of those days where it's like 30 or 40 below zero with the wind chill factor. Yeah. I mean, I have seen, you know, I've, you know, been standing at the gas station and, you know, pumping gas when it's like 20, 30 below and, you know, you could spit on the ground and it instantly freezes up. So, yes.
I can't imagine.
Fuck that.
That's why we're here.
But on these days when it's like 115 with like 30% humidity, how do you guys survive?
What, here in Arizona? I mean, it's a dry heat. So in Chicago, you have to deal with the humidity. So when it's like 95 degrees and, you know, you got 100% humidity, it feels like you're walking in hot water. So it's really, really, really miserable. Here, it's hot, but it's just a dry heat, so I can deal with it. You know, it took me a couple of years to get used to it, but yeah, it's no problem now. I love it.
Did you ever have a moment in the summer when it was like really hot, like way, like beyond 115, and you're like, why did I move here? Like, what am I doing?
Absolutely. It was like, what the hell is going on? I mean, we were here maybe like a couple of years. We had got here a couple of years, and you know, my wife works at the airlines, and you know, I was looking on the news and the planes couldn't take off because it was so hot. I think it was like 120 or something on the field. So they couldn't take off. And I was like, I couldn't believe anything like that. You know, that was crazy.
He went from one form of extreme weather to another, basically.
Right. But I'd rather deal with this than the below zero and the 2 feet of snow.
Yeah, because for about 5 months here in Arizona, the weather is perfect.
Yeah, I mean, you can't beat it. I mean, when it's 30 below zero in Chicago, we're sitting over here at 75, 70, you know, so.
You're not complaining?
Absolutely not. I can deal with the heat for those few months to enjoy the wintertime here.
So were you actually born in Chicago?
I was born in Chicago.
What part of Chicago?
South side of Chicago.
And you were raised there and like everything grew up there in the South side?
Raised there, went to grammar school, high school. At that point in life, I didn't really travel too much until when I went into the military. So, yep, from birth up until 18 years old, I was in Chicago.
Oh, okay. So, so back then, what kind of stuff, like, was music a big thing in your house? Did your parents listen to it or whoever you were around, your family?
My mom is from the South, so like Sundays would be a lot of blues. You know, we would listen to a lot of Johnny Taylor and stuff while she was cleaning the house. My dad collected a lot of records. You know, he loved the LP. So I had my hands dabbled in music for a long time.
And so is there anything particular that you remember your parents, like, I know you said like blues, jazz, stuff like that, but like a particular record or a particular artist that like if it comes on, it like takes you back like to that exact time?
So my father was in love with the Spinners. He used to everything Spinners. He used to love the Spinners. So whenever I hear the Spinners, Rubber Band Man, that always takes me back. So I can see my dad, you know, in the living room singing that song. So, yeah, Spinners.
I know that's the nice thing about music is, like, you can be so far technically in time from a moment, but you turn something on and it can take you exactly back to that same feeling and same moment.
Exactly. Yeah, when I hear that song, it's like I'm, you know, I can flash back to in my living room and just watching my dad with his shot of old granddad singing Rubber Band Man. So, yeah.
So back then, let's see. So what
you're making
it?
Me sound old when you just keep saying back then.
I'm like, back then in the days. Well, my question is, so but how was it? So okay, so how was it like in Chicago then, maybe versus Chicago? Okay, so obviously everyone has that's maybe never been to Chicago or isn't too familiar with it will watch the news and have a certain perception of how Chicago is now. But how would you say it was back then? Was it different, and why do you think it was so different?
It was more different. So back then, like when we were kids, we would be out on the block or, you know, on our porch. So we knew everybody. It goes back to, you know, what Hillary Clinton was saying. It takes a village to help raise our kids. So, you know, you could be two or three blocks away and you might be doing something, you know, wrong. And, you know, that neighbor on that block knew who you were and knew whose son you were, and they would call back home or even take you or spank your bottom right there and then call your mom and dad and tell them that, you know, hey, I just got Donald. He was breaking bottles on the sidewalk and I whooped his butt and he's on his way home now. So when you got back home, you got another whooping. So, you know, just that change, you know, like right now it's like nobody really gets together, you know, like on that block, it was like a family. Everybody knew everybody on the block. There was no craziness. There wasn't no shootings. There wasn't anything like that. Now it's totally different. You know, the gangs are so like when I was coming up and, you know, talking about gangs and stuff like that. So you might have like a particular gang that had an area of like a 8 to 10 block area, surrounding area. And they had that little area. Now, on one block, you have one gang, and then on the next block, you have another gang, and then on the next block, you have another gang. So they're constantly at war with you. They're constantly shooting, and so it's not safe anymore. That was our reason in moving here, because we couldn't keep our kids safe anymore.
And so you said, like, everybody on the block knew each other. So that's that form of, like, community that was, it was strong because everyone looked out for each other. Very strong.
We looked out for each other, you know, looked out for everybody on the block, you know, the little kids, the elderly. You know, if you walking down the street and you saw one of your neighbors with groceries or something, you would run up and, you know, help them with groceries. You know, if you had someone elderly that, you know, couldn't cut their grass or shovel their snow, you know, that was your job. You know, okay, I got to cut the grass, but I got to also cut, you know, Miss Johnson's grass, or I got to shovel my snow. And, you know, my dad was like, no, make sure you go down there to such and such house and do their house too, and this, that, and other. So you just don't have that unity anymore. You know, it's just crazy. Yeah, even going back, you know, like when we would travel back to Chicago to go visit, and, you know, for being out here for 6 years and going back to Chicago, you can just see that difference, that it's not there anymore.
So do you think, like, gentrification plays a huge, is any of the areas that you are familiar that you grew up with, are any of them, have they been, or are they currently being, like, gentrified, like other people moving in and changing the landscape?
It is. And so, like, we had a stretch in Chicago, projects called the Robert Taylor Projects, and it was stretched for a couple of miles. It was right off the expressway, and for years, you know, that was kind of the little downtrodden area. You know, it was low income. And, you know, now if you go back to Chicago, that whole area over there is like all brand new houses. And, you know, you got white people staying over there, and, you know, it's mixed. Cabrini Green, same thing. It was one of the most notorious projects in the country. And you go over there right now and there are $1 million homes and condominiums over there. So it kind of pushed everybody, like maybe in the late 90s, you know, Mayor Daley was trying to, you know, mix the city up, because Chicago is still one of the most segregated cities in America. So he was trying to mix everything up. So he tore all those projects down and he moved all those low income people out. And so that was kind of what the problem was, too, because all those people that was in the low income areas where they were from different gangs or whatever, they moved into new neighborhoods and they're trying to establish themselves now. So now you have a war going on. And, you know, like some of the suburbs that were safe, you know, a lot of people are moving out to the suburbs and bringing all that nonsense out there. So
it's like he disrupted the ecosystem that existed. Like, even exactly. though it was a little crazy, it had its own
it
rules.
Worked. Yeah, right. It worked. You know, you would have like people in those neighborhoods, like, you know, like you didn't really have to go downtown because Chicago is so segregated. And, you know, if you would go downtown to buy nicer things or go, you know, try to go to a white neighborhood to get better meat or better vegetables or fruit, you know, that was frowned upon. So we had to stick to what we had. So we used to have people that would come through, like the meat man would come through and, you know, he would be on the block. He would be in his car, his truck, and he would holler out the window, meat man. And everybody would run down and buy, you know, the steaks, chicken or whatever. You know, he had always had good quality food, or, you know, the vegetable or fruits. So it was, like you said, it was crazy, but it worked. So when you broke all that up, you know, people were confused. They didn't know how to deal with, you know, being outside of their element. And it was hard for a lot of people. I was watching a documentary. It was this one lady. Her whole family had been in the projects all her life. Her grandmother started out, and then when her daughter was old enough, she got an apartment. And then when her daughter was old enough, so they all been in the projects their whole life. And then so when they tore those projects down, people didn't know how to function. They didn't know how to, you know, they were so used to being in that environment that once they got out and got them a house, they would rather be back where they knew everybody. And, you know, being out in the house, it was like they were alone by themselves.
So when you came out here, how did you decide where to live? Did you Google? Did you pre-visit? Or?
So once, you know, me and my wife was trying to get a transfer. We were trying to go to Vegas. We were trying to go to California. So I couldn't get a transfer for either of those areas. So when Phoenix came up, it was just like it was meant to be. You know, my wife was like, you know what, we got to take this. If we don't take it, we're not going to have another opportunity. So luckily I was able to get the transfer. So what we did is we kind of went on Zillow and, you know, trying to learn the area because we didn't know anything about the areas. And we flew out. We got a couple of places that we looked at. We flew out and looked at the couple of places that we saw and decided on the one and end up getting that one.
Oh, that's good. So I'm glad you had a good experience because I notice a lot of people, like, I'm not going to say where you live, obviously, on the show, but like a lot of people, they'll move to like Gilbert and stuff. So since you didn't like when they, because they'll research, basically do their research, and everyone everywhere tells them like just move to Gilbert or move to Chandler. So I thought it was interesting that you guys didn't live there when I met you, and I figured out, like, you know, where you guys lived. I was like, oh, that's cool. You guys didn't just move all the way out there in Farmville, right, and like be on the outskirts over there. So I thought it was neat. You guys lived more a little bit in the mix of everything. So.
Yeah, I mean, we're still city people. You know, we still like the hustle and bustle of the city. And, you know, being from Chicago, which is a large metropolitan area, you know, we're kind of tired of traveling. You know, my wife would have to travel just to get to work, you know, 2.5 hours. Jeez. And that was in the city just to get to work. So, and then, you know, put in the winter time, you have to add like another 30, 40 minutes to that. So, you know, we were happy that, you know, Phoenix is a big city, but it still has a small town kind of feel to it. So, you know, everything is like within 20, 30 minutes of getting around. So, yeah, we kind of like that.
So, Don, do you remember like what the first record was that you bought?
Yes. It was Brothers Johnson, Strawberry Letter 22. It was a 45. And I was in the store, and I was in Jewel Osco. Osco had a little section, and they sold, like, records and stuff in there. And like you say, Drea, way back then. so, yeah, I went in there, and I got that. It was a red 45.
Yep. Do you still have that by chance?
I do not. You do not. Kind of got lost in transition over the years. I did get a lot of my dad's records once he had passed away. So I got some of those. I got all his Spinners records. So they'll always stay with me.
Oh, that's good. And so do you remember, like, what were some, like, good record stores? Like, were there a lot of record stores, or was it because would you just go, like you're saying, how you went to the place that you went to and you're like, oh yeah, I can get it there? So is there any memorable spots where you're like, man, I wish that still existed, or if it does, there are still around, like some record stores or music shops?
Yeah, so the record store that was in my neighborhood that we used to always go to, that my dad used to always go to, was called Jimmy's Records. And then it was funny because once I end up out of the military, I end up working at that store for a little while. So, yeah, it was kind of fun to go back to that store and work there, you know, after being a little kid and going in there all the time. And, you know, you finally get to get behind the register and, you know, always wondered, like, you know, I'd always wonder where he would go when he would go in this back door over there. What was in behind that back door? So now I'm in that back door. So it was cool.
And was there, so you said like how you grew up like on your block and everybody kind of knew everybody. Was there ever like any block parties, or if one person had a party on the block, then everybody else kind of like rolled through?
Oh yeah, it was always, you know, like especially in the summertime, you know, it would just take, you know, like in Chicago they had like block clubs. So, you know, if you were on this particular block, there was like a committee that, you know, everybody got together and they would, you know, put a little money together or whatever. And, you know, they would rent a bouncy house or, you know, rent a horse or something for the kids to play on. And everybody would bring their grills on the street, move all the cars to the back. You know, there would be a DJ or just somebody just playing music and, you know, a lot of games and barbecue and just having fun. So, yeah.
So you said that you had worked at that record store. So how long did you work there?
I only worked there because the owner, you know, I knew he was kind of a butthole when I was a little kid when we was going there, but he was really, really, really a complete butthole when I started working for him. So it was short-lived, but yeah, I went in. I never forget the incident that made me quit. It was a guy came in who was looking for a Shabba Ranks CD. And I went to Jimmy and I was like, man, are we going to get this back in stock? Oh, we'll never get this back. And, you know, we ain't going to order that no more. It didn't sell. And I'm not going to bring it back. So I was like, all right. So I go back. I was like, no, we're not going to get it. You know, check Sam Goody or something like that. And once he heard me tell the customer to check another record store, he went ballistic. Don't you ever send my customers to somebody else, to the white man's store, such, 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 such. Don't you ever. And he cursed me out and I took off my smock and that was the end of it right there.
You're like, okay, bye. I'm not gonna right. Do this. How funny. So like growing up, I guess when you're like a teenager and things like that, what kind of music were you into? Did you ever have like a little crew? Because like, how did you start getting into DJing? Were you into just like music and bouncing around at first, like finding your lane, or did you start DJing first? Because I noticed some people will start DJing and then they'll find their lane.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I had, you know, well, Chicago is the mecca for house music, so growing up with that, you know, it was always in our lives, you know, music was always a big thing in Chicago. So growing up, you know, this in high, especially high school, you know, I would listen to WBMX. They would play all the, you know, the Hot Mix 5 and all that kind of stuff. So listening to that. So I didn't really, really get into the scene until like maybe I'd say about 15 or 16 years old. That's the first time I went to the music box. And then so just loving the scene and loving the music and listening to the radio and going to parties and hearing that great music, disco, you know, tracks and all that kind of stuff. So once I got out of the military is when I started like getting into the party scene. Like I was promoting parties, hadn't started DJing yet, just promoting parties, hosting parties and doing things like that. And getting into the DJ, I didn't really start DJing until like 2007.
Okay, so really quick, what's the music box? Was that just like a venue or like a warehouse or?
So the music box, yeah, the music box is like one of those underground clubs. I mean, it was black owned. It was one of the only clubs in Chicago, black owned clubs that was downtown Chicago. It was owned by Robert Williams. And they had, the DJ was Ron Hardy. So we were 15, 16 years old going to these parties and, you know, sneaking in or, you know, he knew how old we were and and he would let us in and we would party there. So my parents would not let me stay out late like that, you know. So what we would do is I would go to my cousin's house because my cousin's parents were way more lenient than my parents were. So I would go, I'm going to spend the night at William's house. And then it's like, all right. And so we would go out and, you know, leave there Saturday, go Saturday night. And we would get on the train like early Sunday morning, like at 7 o'clock in the morning, coming back from the party. So, yeah.
That That's pretty crazy.
that is pretty wild.
And I couldn't imagine my kids, you know, doing something like that. You know, times were different. You know, it was a lot safer for us. And, you know, the people that was in the party, the patrons in the party, they looked out for us. They knew we were underage. And, you know, there was a lot of drugs going on there, alcohol. So, excuse me. You know, they wouldn't let us drink or, you know, do the drugs or anything like that. They looked out for us, so.
That's good, because, I mean, that's how it should be, really. Like, you know, you're there to enjoy the music, and if the, you know, the older people should look out for the youngins and be like.
Yeah. And that's what they did. You know, they looked out for us, and, you know, they would always, you know, we would be at the bar, you know, trying to get a drink or something, and, you know, they would always just give us juice or pop or something like that. But they looked out for us. They made sure that we got home safely, because we would all travel. You know, it might be 10 or 11 of us. You know, we would all leave the club together, get on the train. We'd be dead tired, falling back, sleeping on the train. But we all looked out for each other. And that's why still to this day, like, you know, all the people that we party with, we still are cool still to this day. It's like family.
That's good. And so you said you got into promoting. So how did you start doing that?
So a friend of mine, when I got out the military, a friend of mine, he was telling me about this DJ that he had. His name was Malcolm Walls, and that we started doing backyard parties. So, you know, we would make our own pluggers. You know, we would draw out pluggers and go to the copy machine and copy them. And we would go and pass them out at high schools and I mean, not high schools, at the little neighborhood bars and stuff like that. And pretty much after a while, it just got word of mouth. You know, man, they doing a party. Malcolm spinning at such and such, or this and that and the other. So just getting out there like every week and passing out pluggers and just word of mouth, really. So that's how I started out.
By pluggers, you mean, I'm assuming you mean like flyers? Yeah. Okay, yeah. So I'd like to hear different terms.
Right. That's what we called them in Chicago. They were pluggers.
Pluggers. I want to remember that one. So that's how you started doing that. So did you, because obviously I've never been to Chicago, I've never been one of your parties or anything. So did they, like you said, they grew their own reputation and people started like looking forward to coming to them and stuff like that. And where would you host them mostly? Was it like at one location?
No, it would be either like it started out like backyard parties or my friend, he had an apartment. And it was in a, like a six-flag building. So what he would do is he would knock on all his neighbors' door. And he's like, man, look, Friday night we're doing this party. It's going to be loud. You know, don't call the police on us. And, you know, we were 20. I got out of the military. I was like 22. So we were all like 22, 23 years old. And we were having fun, but it wasn't nothing crazy. You know, the neighbors never complained. And we did that party at that place for, man, over a year. Like, yeah, like almost every other Friday, we did that for about a year. Never had no complaints, no craziness, no fighting, no nothing. Just, it was always about the music.
And did anyone in the building ever just come to join you guys? Like, hey.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We would have, it was this one older guy. He was, you know, I look back now, I'm 51 now. So, you know, back then he was maybe 51. We thought he was old as hell. So, so he would come by and he would come down and he'd have his little drinks and, you know, he saw the pretty ladies and, you know, he would have a ball. He would look forward to it. And then it would come down. Like, I would go over to my friend's house, like, during the week, and I would go over there and he would be downstairs just, you know, having a drink and chilling with them. You know, he loved it. Yeah.
So you guys probably provided that guy a lot of entertainment and excitement.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's good.
Absolutely.
So when you were in the military, did you ever miss, like, what kind of music did you listen to when you were in the military? Did you ever miss, like, the parties and stuff?
Absolutely. So once I got out of boot camp, so I was stationed in Philadelphia. So we had this club in Chicago called The Warehouse. Not the original warehouse, but the second warehouse. And so I used to fly back to Chicago. Like, if I didn't have duty that weekend, I would fly back like Friday or Saturday. Like, the party would be like on Saturday night. So I would come in. I wouldn't even tell my parents that I was in. I say like maybe 9 or 10 times. My parents didn't even know I was in Chicago. So I would get in like Friday night, one of my friends or my cousin or somebody would pick me up and we'll hang out Friday night and just do stuff all during the day on Saturday, and then Saturday night party at the warehouse, and then I would jump back on the plane Sunday and go back. My parents wouldn't even know I was in Chicago.
Did you ever have a moment where you're like on the plane, you're like, what am I doing? Or were you like, heck yeah, I know what I'm doing, I'm gonna have fun.
Yeah, I had no regrets. I was looking forward to it. I couldn't wait. I was in Philly, so, you know, they had some house music. It was a little bit, but, you know, by being on the East Coast, it was more hip hop. And, you know, I was into the hip hop, but I was more of a house head, though.
Always, always a house head.
Yep.
So what do you think are, really quick before we jump into like how you got started DJing, so what do you think, there's any misconceptions that people have about house, or you're so entrenched in it, you're like, I know about it and I don't know what everybody else doesn't know about it?
Well, coming like up in Chicago, so what you have to know about house music, it was born in the gay clubs. You know, the original warehouse was a gay club. You know, if you go back, if you do your history and, you know, go to the Paradise Garage and, you know, all those bathhouses, all that music started in gay clubs. And so, you know, being on the house scene, you know, you have a lot of, you know, gay people, you know, LBGT at the parties. And, you know, they never bothered nobody. You know, they weren't, you know, trying to, you know, they were there to have a good time like everybody else. So a lot of misconceptions with like being in the urban areas of Chicago, because a lot of people didn't, you know, really, nah, I can't go to that club because they got, you know, such and such there. Or, you know, they got trannies there. They got such and such. I ain't going in there. But, you know, my thing is, like I always say, you know, if you don't question your sexuality, who cares what, you know, who gives a care? Everybody's there. We're all people. You know, we're there to enjoy the music. Wow, you're okay there, Drew?
Yeah.
I don't know if you fell
asleep. I was like adjusting myself, and I freaking definitely need the shit out of my mic boom.
But yeah, but you're right. Like you're saying, you're like, if everyone's there with the same objective, we're all there to enjoy ourselves, enjoy the music, have a good time, we're all one big music fam, then who cares?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's just like black, white, Mexican, Puerto Rican, you know, with this there, we're people. That's one thing about music. Music can bring everybody together, you know, regardless of your race, creed, color, gender, you know, it's music.
Music and food, right?
Exactly.
So, like you said, you started getting into promoting and things like that. Mm-hmm. Is there a particular party that you promoted that you remember that stands out, where either it's like, you were promoting it and you didn't think it was going to be like a big thing and it ended up being a big thing, or even like on the opposite end where you like, you really thought it was going to and it didn't turn out how you wanted or like you thought?
Yeah, so we had one party that was on the lakefront, and it didn't really start out. We was just going up there just to, you know, we told a few friends and we was just going to play some music, and it turned out to be like one of the biggest parties that we had ever did. And I still remember that night I got so drunk. I was sitting in the back of my car, and it was like one of those moments where it's like, you know, 100 people and everybody's partying. I'm in the back of my car, and then I wake up and it's absolutely nobody there. Everybody had gone. So yeah, that was one of the great nights. And then you have some that, you know, like especially like in the wintertime in Chicago, you know, you could promote the, you know, you can promote a party to death. And, you know, it might be one of those days where it's 20 below zero and, you know, people are like, fuck that, I'm not coming outside.
So what is that like? Like, if so, when it is super cold out there, and obviously you're going to have to bundle up and put the layers on, so you're going to be going out there strutting to the party. And when you get there, it's like, do you take all the layers off? Because you're going to get hot because you're going to be dancing and stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't care, man. You know, you go, you would layer up, you know, you get in your car, you go where you're going, and you know, they always had the coat check, or if you knew the DJ, you didn't want to check your coat, you know, you put your coat behind the DJ booth and you would go there and sweat your ass off.
So into the DJing part. So what made you, because obviously you were always around the music, involved in it and stuff like that. So what made you be like, oh, I think I do want to do that? Or I think, you know, what made you gravitate towards it?
Well, it started out like, so I was doing this party we were doing this weekly, like an after work party. And we had all the DJs. And so one day it was like, man, come on, you gonna play it. You're going to play some music tonight. And I was like, no, I don't want to. Like, no, you're going to play. So they got up and made me. So it's like once I got behind the turntable, that's when I got the bug. And I was like, all right, well, let me try this out. So that's how I started. That was 2007.
Did you start on records or did you use CDJs?
I started out with the, because they would always, like the set that we did, everybody had records. So I started out, my first blend was on a record. And then I was with that group for a while. And then once we stopped doing that party, I got with this other group. So they were doing all CDJs. So I started out basically really, really getting really serious with the CDJs I started out with.
With CDJ. So did you have, when you were doing like the records at first, did you have your own turntables? Like, did you eventually get your own before you got your CDJs or?
No, I had friends that had turntables. And like I said, I wasn't really interested in DJing. So I would always go to their house and they be doing their thing. So like when I started, you know, I bought me a pair of, there was some real cheap Gemini CD players that were really crappy. And that's what I learned on.
Yeah, and too, it's like it's all about your own ear and like what you find interesting and what you can put together. Right. So
exactly.
What would you say, just really quick, like some pointers for people that are starting out on CDJs, and what do you feel like is the difference between doing the CDJ and doing the records?
Well, the records, you know, you can't hide behind anything with records. You know, you got to have your ear, you got to be able to listen. There's no computer, there's no sync button, there's nothing to tell, you know, to help you blend your record. You have to use your ear. So if I was to suggest anybody, I would suggest start it out with records, because it's going to help you, you know, it's going to be way easier once you transition to anything else.
And so when would you say, obviously house has always been like obviously underground thing.
Excuse me.
But would you say that there was like in a way of kind of commercialization of it at some point in the 90s or any time? Like, do you feel like it was ever like more people were just a little bit more savvy or aware to it? Not that they knew everything, but they were just, you know, they took to it a little easier.
Yeah. So, you know, like in a, I'll give you a perfect example. So the Chosen Few picnic in Chicago, that's a big, big picnic. You know, it's worldwide now. Everybody knows about it. So years ago, it started out as a little small picnic, you know, in the back of the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago. Excuse me. Oh, I got to take a drink.
Yeah, no, I know sometimes that's why we have our water right here, right? Too.
So once it got commercialized and, you know, it got all this big global. So you would see people that were like, right, not really house heads. They were just there just to be on the scene. And it got so commercial. You know, you got vendors out there now. And, you know, the city has gotten involved in it. So it's like once it got to that point, you know, we kind of stopped going. You know, we miss it when it was just real raw and it was just like real house music, real house heads. Now it's so commercial and, but yeah, I like it better, you know, the raw stuff back in the day.
So what do you think the city decided to like get involved? Was it because they saw the money, you think?
Exactly. So it had gotten so big. So once it was behind the museum, you know, it would grow every year, it would grow and grow and grow and grow. And so they moved to one area where it was a little bit bigger. And that kind of outgrew that first year. Once they got to that point there, it was like, we can't hold that many people here, so it has to go somewhere else. So when they got to the other, where they are right now in Hayes Park, I think that first year it was free. And then the second year it was like $5 after that. And then, you know, they start fencing the whole area off what's that big concert that they have? Like a, I can't even think of it right now. But they start fencing everything off And so you had to come through like certain exits just to get in. Then it went from $5 to $10. Then it jumped up to $20 the third year. So it just gotten crazy. So now it's like, you know, you're going to spend hundreds of dollars to get this. They have $1,000 packages now.
Jeez. With parking.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Holy God, only $1,000. It's like Coachella or anything else, basically.
That's what I was looking for. Coachella is like that. That's what I was. Thank you.
You're welcome. I was going to say that, but I was like, maybe he's not talking about that.
Right. That's exactly what I was talking about. I couldn't think of it.
So from moving from like being there as a DJ and a promoter in Chicago and then now coming here to Phoenix, what do you think is, do you see a difference within like community within the music here?
I'm sorry, can you say that again? You had broken up a little bit.
Do you see a difference in the community within Phoenix as opposed to Chicago?
Just being on this scene is still new to us. I mean, it kind of feels, you know, like when we go out to picnics and everything, it kind of feels the same way. But, you know, just knowing everybody in Chicago is more of a big fam. So coming out here and not knowing anybody and, you know, trying to, you know, strike up relationships with people and, you know, get new friendships. So that's kind of new. But it's the same kind of vibe, man. It's all about the music. Everybody loves the music. And, yeah, it's the same. Music will bring everybody together.
Do you feel like, this is a question that I always ask people, like, do you feel like making new friendships as an adult is like harder like than when you're younger, you know?
Well, I think it's kind of easy. It's not so bad because, you know, as you're older now, you know what you want. You know what you're not going to tolerate with. You know, back then when we were younger, you know, you was just basically out there and then, you know, you'd have to meet somebody and, you know, maybe a couple of months down the line, you know, oh, he ain't shit or whatever. So, you know, now as we be older, you know, as we get older, we can, you know, I can read people kind of like right off the bat. I'm like, oh, no, I don't think he's going to be my cup of tea. You know, I can speak and be friendly and cordial, but I'm not going to draw myself in close to him. So,
and yeah. So obviously a lot of people, everybody knows you and De La. So mm-hmm. Do you remember the first time you saw De La DJ? Were you guys just friends from around and then like you saw her DJing, or did you see her like DJing, like sort of thing?
Okay, so we've been knowing each other for like maybe 10 years before we had started dating or anything. You know, I was always promoting parties. So we used to have this little group and it was, we used to call them like Charlie's Angels. We had three female DJs. It would be De La, Miss Nikki, and Erica Kane. And I would be Bosley, and then my other boy was like Charlie. So
that's awesome.
So that was our little group. So we knew each other from back there. So, you know, just going, doing parties together. So we knew each other. We were always friends.
That's cool. Like, so is there a lot of like lady DJs out there in Chicago?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Some of the best DJs in the world are females out there. Yeah. Lori Branch. She's come out here, I think, once or twice to do the Phoenix House Fest. I know she did it once out here, for sure, I know. But I think she has family out here, so she's been out here a couple of times. But she's incredible. She's from, you know, those days back at the original warehouse. She's one of the really, really, really good female DJs. One of the ones that inspired De La. So, yeah.
Cool. And then how do you feel like the house scene is here? Do you feel like there's no house scene or it's just super small? Because I'm not, and Andrew's the same, we don't know, we're not well versed or anything like on house. Like I think I had misconceptions about it, like of what it actually was, and then when I started just getting to know it a little bit more, I'm like, oh, okay, like it reminds me, like it's not gospel, but I feel like it has that feeling for people. Like it brings everybody together and they feel like they can celebrate, right. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think it's sort of, do you get what I'm saying when I mean like,
yeah,
it's a gospel?
So when we first got here, the first person we met as far as like on the music scene was Coco. And so I was so surprised, you know, like hearing the music, you know, that they were playing. You know, like especially some of the disco and some of the rare stuff, I was kind of taken aback. I didn't think it would be out here like that on this scene out here. But yeah, I think I get that same good inspiration feeling from the music. Yep.
And it's because there's a house, so the House Fest, there's one out here every year, right? It's like once a year.
Yeah. So it's called the Phoenix House Fest. So I've been a part of it for the past maybe 3 or 4 years. I did it 3 years, and last year we didn't do it. The year before last, we didn't do it, and then we didn't do it this year because of COVID. But it usually happens around April, and we'll bring some DJs from Chicago. And, you know, like the year before, like we had, who did we have? We had Andre Hatchett, and we had Wayne Williams. And so they would bring a lot of, you know, some of the chosen few DJs out here. Some of, you know, there's been Mike Dunn, Gene Hunt. A lot of people have come out here.
And for those of us like Andrew and I, where you're like, you know, we want to do some homework. We want to learn some stuff. So what are some DJs or like some tracks that you say, like, you need to know these? Like, if you say you know house, you want to know house, like, these are some things that I would recommend you start with.
Oh, man, now you're trying to make me think. I didn't do any homework. So as far as DJs, you would, if you, you know, you have to go back to Frankie Knuckles and Ron Hardy of Chicago. Tracks, now you're trying to bust my brain. I can't even think of anything right now because, like, I'm nervous. Let me see. Feel free to talk amongst yourselves while I do research.
Don's doing a little research here. Right. Doing a little quick, maybe, little look into his own library. And we just want to say, if you have never had the privilege of seeing Don and Dayla's music room, the people that have do talk about it and how we're all jealous of you guys.
How we aspire to have your music room.
Yeah, everybody right. does.
Yeah, everybody, when they come by, they always say it looks like a record store when you walk in there. So, you know, people are still amazed every time they come over here. So, yeah. So getting back to the tracks that, you know, you would have to go with Marshall Jefferson's Move Your Body. Ron Trent, Altered States. These are like classic Chicago tracks that, you know, if you put these on, anybody from Chicago, you know, would instantly get up and, you know, start dancing. Sleazy D's, I Lost Control. Adonis, No Way Back. Farley, Jackmaster Funk, Love Can't Turn Around. So, I mean, the list is long as hell. You know, we'll be here for hours talking about it. But.
So I know, obviously, House, like you said, originated in Chicago. But I know New York City also had its own little scene. Did you ever get to visit anything in New York as far as like any parties or anything like that?
I did not. And then being in Philadelphia, I was so mad. But I think, you know, like I said, every other weekend I was coming back to Chicago. So like being in Philadelphia, you know, you're right there at New York. And I never got a chance to travel to New York and do any of the parties. That's one thing that I regret.
I know, because I was wondering, I'm like, I wonder how they were different, because, you know, New York has its own vibe, so.
Yeah, I would love to have gone to New York and, you know, to be a part, like, you know, I got documentaries down here, like at the Paradise Garage and the Loft, and I would love to have been there.
So there's some things that always get circulated, you know, people read them, things get posted online. So one of the things too is how basically a lot of genres of music, even music genres that maybe were originated or popularized by the Black community, when you look at in a mainstream sense, the faces of them, you know, are not Black. Do you feel like that happens? Do you feel like that happens a lot? Maybe like, with even house music, like some stuff that people know about house, that it gets whitewashed in a sense, or people just don't understand maybe the roots of or how it started.
Like, say that. So what do you mean when you say that? Say that again, because you were kind of breaking up a little bit. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Okay, so like a lot of times, you know, there's subcultures that start, and they start, like you're saying, like within the LGBT community or within the Black community, and then they start, you know, gaining a following, and more people from all walks of life, which is totally fine. Start gravitating towards it and contributing to it as well. But then once it starts reaching more of like a pinnacle or at the top, and when you look up there, that the faces of it don't reflect the roots of it. Do you feel like that happens a lot?
Sometimes I think, you know, with more house music, by being more underground, it's kind of, you know, like you would look into, you know, mainstream, like you would see sometimes, like you see a commercial and, you know, you'll hear like a little house beat behind it or something like that, or a track or something playing. But I don't think it's gotten really, to me, I don't think it's really been that commercialized like that. It kind of stays underground, you know what I mean? Because it's always been an underground type of music. So I don't really, in my perspective, no, I don't see that happen.
So there's these two DJs that I would always see that they would like do dubs or like remixes, like back in, I would say, late 90s, early 2000s. But are they considered house DJs? I don't know. I'm just going to ask you. There's David Morales and Hex Hector. Were they house DJs?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Out of New York. Yes. And they are legends. Yes.
Yeah, because I'd always, especially on Mariah Carey track.
Right.
I'd always see
that. I mean, even, you know, like even Frankie Knuckles, you know, he's done work with, you know, a lot of R&B artists. And, you know, he's gotten Grammy Awards for some of his music that he's done. So, yeah.
Would you ever play those out, like a remix of like a Mariah Carey, like a David Morales remix or anything? Would you ever, like, if you're having a party, would you ever grab for one of those? And if you do they ever get a reaction? Like, do people like vibe with it, or are they mostly like, eh, I don't really hear this?
Well, you know, sometimes you can read a crowd and, you know, you'll know what would work and what wouldn't work. You know, like, say, you know, going to, you know, a underground where it's like deep disco party, I know maybe that song wouldn't work, but if I was, you know, in a more place, you know, like somewhere downtown or something, and the crowd was a little different. So, yeah, I would play it.
You're like, I don't care.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, force feed the crowd a little bit. You know, there's been times where I went in and, you know, had music planned. Like, that was my thing. Like, back in the day when I first started, I would sit up and I would, like, get a set together, you know, all right, I'm going to play this first and play this second. I'm going to play this, that, and other. And then when you get there, you know, it's totally out the window because the crowd is not feeling nothing that you picked out to play. So now you got to play something else. So now you're nervous. So now I don't, you know, I would go and I just feel the crowd. You know, I hear what the DJ was playing before me. You know, if you're an opening DJ, you know, you have a little bit more leeway where you can start off and do a little bit, you know, play around and see how the crowd works with. But, you know, let's say I'm coming behind another DJ. So I'm there, you know, 30, 40 minutes before I get on. And I can see that, you know, the crowd is reacting to this. So they, you know, they really love this. So, okay, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to play that kind of music.
Have you ever had a gig that you were really nervous to play?
Every gig that I do, I'm nervous to play. I'm nervous every time.
So what kind of projects are you guys working on right now?
So right now with, you know, with COVID and everything, like, totally messing everything up. Right now, all we're doing is we're working on, we do a weekly radio show on World Vibe Radio 1. You can download the app, and it's a 24-hour radio station. I do my show on Fridays along with my turntable brothers, DJ JMK and Ben Hardison. They call him Ben Jammin. And we're on from 8 till 11:30 Mountain Standard Time here in Arizona. And Dayla has her show with Freedom that she does every Saturday from 7 to 9:30. So, you know, we kind of stay busy. Dayla is, you know, she's way more active than I am. You know, like today she was just in here making a mix. So I'm kind of laid back. I'm not the type. I don't like to get on live stream. I don't like to, you know, do a lot of mixes or anything like that. I just wait till my turn to play and I go on and I play. So we're different like that.
You guys are like the scales. You're balanced out.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. So how did you get started with the Rear radio station?
So the guy that's running the radio station, he's been out here for some years, and we were introduced to him by some friends. So he actually came out. So we were doing a party. I was doing a monthly party with a friend of mine, Brian Berry, and you know, he's affiliated with the Phoenix House Fest. So we were doing a weekly party at the Concierge every third Friday here. So JMK, his name is Jiro Anthony, he actually came down to one of the parties and he was listening to me play. And he was like, man, you know what? I need to, you know, get this guy down here. So he came up with the idea. He shot it to us. And at first I was like, nah, don't want to really play on an internet show. And, you know, is it going to be video? Because I don't like being on video and all that. He's like, nah, he says it's going to be. He said, you know, if you really want to, you know, you can pre-record it and send it in, or we can do it live. So I talked to Daylon. She's like, you know, why not? Let's just do it. Let's do it. I was like, all right. So we end up doing it. I was nervous as hell that first day.
So what makes you nervous?
Just getting on and thinking I'm going to mess up, you know, and, you know, like it's easier because I don't have a crowd to play for being on the radio. But, you know, if I'm out at the parties or whatever, you know, I get really, really, really nervous. I mean, I have like, there's been times where I've gotten like anxiety, you know, like 15 minutes before I was getting ready to go on, like heart palpitation, and I'm getting nervous and I don't know what to do. I'm like, I need a drink. Let me calm down. But being on the radio, you know, it's more like, because, you know, we're in the station and, you know, we have a cocktail or two, and it's just like more like we just in the room just playing for ourselves.
Like, you know, we're having a good time. Friends, basically.
Yeah, just we're in there, we're joking. You know, we're playing the dozens with each other while we're playing, and, you know, he might cuss me out and I might cuss him out. Of course, you can't hear it on the radio show, but it's just, it makes it more at ease when I'm there with my brothers playing like that on Friday. So it makes it a little bit easier.
And that's good. I think people need to remember that, because, like I said, Andrew and I meet all kinds of people that are just getting started and stuff, and they get so focused on, like, I think, like, to me, the skill will come in time. Like, it's not going to come overnight. It's good to practice, and you should be dedicated to it, but don't obsess over that part so much. Like, don't forget to have fun, because that's part of what it is, to have a good time and just chill out and relax with everybody.
Yeah, like Ron Hardy, one of the most legendary house DJs ever, he wasn't great at blending at all. You know, majority of the time he would slam a lot of records and this, but it was all about the music. It was all about the fellowship. You know, we were all there to have a good time. He played great music, and that's what it's all about. It's just music. It brings everybody together.
Do you feel like some people get lost in, like, and other things, like maybe they some people do genuinely, like, well, I get into because of music, but then they just get lost in, like, the hype of things?
Sometimes, yeah, they can be. You know, you get a lot of big-headed people, you know, like, you know, I know a couple of people, not mentioning names, but, you know, they would, you know, they would make music, you know, they would make some tracks or, you know, do some edits, and, you know, if those edits got any kind of notoriety, you know, they thought they shouldn't stink no more. You know, they thought they were better than everybody. They would come to the parties all high and mighty. And, you know, so, yeah, it can get to some people's heads, you know, fame. But, like, for the most part, the people that we hang out with, everybody is, like, mellow. Nobody's looking for that kind of stuff. So
yeah, it's like, keep your goofiness over there. We're just chilling.
Those kind of people we don't even mess around with.
Yeah, that's good. But we're so glad to have met you guys. Like, I don't know. We just like Don and De La Hall. Yeah, we love them.
We just like you guys.
it was like when we first met you guys, it was just like, you know, you have that, you know, you guys have that thing. Like, we've been knowing you guys for years. You know, you guys are such good people. So, you know, it's.
That means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah. We try our best.
Yeah, we try. Yeah, like, remember when you guys first invited us over to your house? We were so excited, huh, Andrew? Yeah.
When we got the invite.
We're like, we're going to sit at the cool kids table tonight.
You guys are always welcome at the house. There's never an invite needed. All you got to say is, hey, we're coming over. We want to play some music on. You guys will be up. Yeah, come on by. You know, because we, you know, that's what one thing we miss about Chicago is, like, we would have these session parties, you know, like, everybody would come over. Like, we have, like, maybe 10 DJs would come over. Everybody would bring records, and it might start at 8 o'clock and it might be over with at 6 o'clock in the morning. And it's just everybody just playing music, having drinks. And, you know, we kind of miss that. So whenever we have an opportunity to play music or you know, to host you guys whenever you guys want to come over and play some music. It's always open doors for you guys. So,
well, thank you. I remember D-Gents too had said he was talking about that, how basically, like, there's not as much like the backyard like get-togethers and stuff like there used to be here. He was saying, like, from his previous experiences, and he's like, well, actually, he's like, you know, someone that I think does exemplify that is Don and Dayla. They still do that, and that's part of the reason too, I guess, why he loved you guys.
Yep. Hold on 1 second. I gotta let my son in the door. Hold on. Hold on. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Yeah, so we'll just narrate real quick. So right now we're staring at
a black leather couch. That is a sweet dog.
Sorry.
You're good.
What's your dog's name again? Is it Ginger? I can't remember.
Ginger.
I know. And I can hear Ginger.
Right. I'm sorry. I hope that didn't mess up the interview.
We like it raw and live. Yeah.
So do your kids ever get irritated, like, when you do have people over and you're up and you're playing music all loud? Do they care? No.
Nope, because that means that we're leaving them alone and they can do whatever they want to do. So
they're like, yes.
Right. Sometimes they'll come in, are you guys having guests over tonight? Like, no.
They're okay. All praying for it.
Right.
Yeah, someone come through.
Yeah,
right, please. When we ever have people like that over there, they'll be in their room playing the video games, and, you know, they ain't having, so. They're used to it. You know, they're going to be, I think they'll be party kids like we were, so.
How funny. Well, Don, I want to say. Okay, you can say.
No, good.
Okay.
Good.
What would you say, just because I'm putting you on the spot, so I'll only keep it to three. What do you say for your family, or your, even if it's like your people that you consider family, that are like your friends you consider family, what would you say is your top three cookout classics, stuff that would get everybody going and on the floor, no questions?
Well, coming from Chicago, so stepping music, I don't know if you guys are familiar with stepping music in Chicago, so those would be, you put me on the spot, man. Family Affair by, is it the OJs? I'm not familiar, but I'm not sure. Damn, Drea, why are you doing this to me? But I can't think of nothing right now. I'm like at a freeze. You done got me. You stumped me. I'm sorry.
So, well, the Spinners, right?
Well, that's my father's thing.
So what would you say then in your house with your family growing up? So you say the Spinners for sure, obviously.
The Spinners for sure. The Temptations for sure. And Minnie Riperton.
Okay, good.
Is it a Sly and the Family Stone Family Affair?
That's who I was looking for. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. I saw Andrew like looking. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get back while he looks it up.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
She's got me on the spot here, so she's got me all nervous. I don't know what the, I can't I, even think
I'm
right.
I'm doing rapid fire again.
Right.
And then,
you know, you should have sent the, I should have had a writer where it made you send the questions over first, so I could have been like totally prepared.
I thought about telling you like all that stuff, but I like when Dre puts people on the spot.
Okay, so right. the thing is, if I'm usually in control of coordinating it,
exactly.
I tell my person, but Andrew, you know how you men are, you guys kind of just, you're real right. chill, and then you're like, whoops, I forgot about that, but it's okay, I'll let them know.
Right.
And then
it's better that way when it's raw like that. You catch people, you know, you get the real them, you know,
the real
get
answers.
Something that's been manufactured. You know, I had time. Okay, Andrew sent me these questions over last week.
Let me research.
Right, I did my research. I'm sitting here and I'm firing it off, you know, real. Nah, it's better raw.
And then last one is, what are you want to say?
Yeah, what are the songs that remind you of summer?
So they're not necessarily songs that were released in the summer, but songs that say summertime to you, like maybe three songs, maybe.
Can it be any genre? Does it have to be when
no
I was...
No matter what, no matter what, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be.
Okay, so one for me is always Summertime by Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince. What's another one? That's the only one that really, really stands out for me, is just that whenever I hear that song, I always just think of this chilling in the summertime, being out in the park, in the backyard, or whatever. So you stumped me again, Drew. Thank you.
Did you ever play Double Dutch?
I thought we were friends.
Did you ever play Double Dutch?
You saw I was stumped on that question that Drea answered, and then you're just going to come right behind. And
he was waiting.
Right. Gotcha. He had it loaded.
Since they mentioned it in the song, did you ever play Double Dutch?
Okay, so yes, I did. You know, I have, I have two sisters, so... Like I said, being on that block, man, you did everything. You know, everybody played, you know, you played with the girls, you know, especially if you were liking one of the girls and, you know, you saw them out there. So you trying to get in and do what they're doing. So I have participated in Double Dutch, you know, once or twice.
Yeah, I've had my time. And do you really know your neighbors at all? Just because, like, because, you know, we moved out away from Phoenix and we live, you know, out here where we live. And, like, I would say maybe like a few of my neighbors I'm kind of familiar with, but I don't know them on a personal level. Do you know your neighbors at all?
Absolutely not. And that's what's so crazy. You know, that's the one thing like me and Dela always talk about is like we miss that. You know, like our neighbors that's directly next to us, we know them. She's from Chicago, so we see her and we'll talk. And then maybe the neighbor across the street. But, you know, for the most part, it's just driving by and waving. And, you know, don't really know our neighbors like that, like we did back in the day. No, I did not.
Yeah, I feel like, too, like growing up with me, so for the most part, I lived in like what people would say questionable parts of town. And then for 3 years, I moved to an area that was at the time, like over there on 59th Avenue in Thunderbird. I don't know if you've ever been over there. Okay, so at the time when we moved there in the 90s, it was predominantly white, literally, like there was just me and a few other people in the grade that were not white in the school that I went to. It was super crazy. So, but we noticed moving there that like nobody really knew each other. And then in the other parts of town we lived in, it was like everybody, like you're saying, knew everybody. So like if I went and I'm like, oh, my mom's not home for some reason, you know, no cell phones back then. I know I can go to so-and-so's house and knock on their door and like, oh, mom's not home. Then I can go there and they're going to take care of me like I'm their own kid. Right. And I feel like, too, like, that's what's... And I think, too, part of it is people move here from everywhere, so you don't really familiarize yourself. Like, you just don't, you know, you don't know everybody, so it kind of sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have that here. We miss that a lot. You know, like you say, you know, coming home and, you know, like if, you know, like if I, if, like I say, back in Chicago, back in the day, if I was coming home and I knew my parents weren't there and, you know, like you said, you know, oh, my mom and dad is not here. Or, come on in the house, get you something to eat, and we'll wait till you get there, whatever. And, you know, and my parents didn't really worry. They knew that we were taken care of. So we missed that.
Yeah. So everybody that's listening, please take care of each other. Look out for each other, because that's absolutely what we all need to do for each other.
It still takes a village to raise our kids. We need everybody.
I truly believe that as well.
I do too.
Well, thank you so much, Don. We've had so much fun. I love this interview. It's really great. And really quick, just so, again, let everybody know where you would, if you want to be followed on any type of social media platform, where they can follow you at, and also about your radio station. So where they can find the station in general, and then also when your show is.
So my show is every Friday, Mountain Standard Time at 8 o'clock. It's on World Vibe Radio 1. You can download the app on your app store or what is it for Google? Is it the Google Play Store or something like that? Okay. And we have a website up and you can go to the website at World Vibe Radio 1. That way you can go on the website. You can see all our on-air personalities. All our social media is on there. You can catch me on Facebook at Don Gray, D-O-N-G-R-A-Y. Instagram, I always get messed up with that. My wife always jumps on me. I think it's always Don. We didn't lose each other, did we?
No, I can still hear you. We can still hear you.
My screen, I just kind of went crazy.
Are you good?
So I think my Instagram is Don Gray, but I think she says it's Chi-Town Don. So it's one of those. Two, right? If you go on the website for the radio station, all that information is on there.
Awesome. And then if you do end up following Don on Facebook, just get ready for the good memes that he posts, because he posts some funny stuff.
Yeah, I live for that. I have a whole section in my phone just for those things. So I live for
that. Well, thank you, Don. We really appreciate it. And we're going to wrap it up really here, so don't hang up yet, because we'll wrap it up before. Okay, so like we said.
And then I also want to say, too, go out and vote, people. We need everyone to vote. It's a lot of crazy shit going on right now. Go out and vote.
And can you just really quick explain to people in whatever way you want to why it's important to vote? And because a lot of people have the conspiracy like voting doesn't matter. But can you explain to them why? I think because you come from a city that's super rich with history. And over mm-hmm. here, we have our own, but people are just wishy-washy over here. So can you explain why it's important to vote?
It's important to vote because your vote counts. If not, you know, we get idiots in office like we have now. You know, we had a lot of people, you know, like they did a study, and I don't want to get too political, but, you know, they did a study in all these states where, you know, current president had won, and he maybe won by 5,000 votes at this one state. And then they would look at the numbers, and, you know, over 50,000 black people didn't vote, or Hispanic people didn't vote. And all these numbers, and if everybody had went out and vote, you know, we wouldn't have our problem that we have today.
Exactly.
So you must vote. You know, our ancestors died. You know, you got to realize it's not that long ago that women and black people did not have the right to vote. People died to give us that right. And so we must go out and exercise that right to vote.
Okay, so that's a perfect way to put it. And I'm sure you're tired of the name Donald being disgraced.
Exactly. I don't even go, you know, just call me Big Don. I don't even want to use Donald.
So did they, growing up really quick, did they call you Don or Donald, or what do they call you? You're like your family.
I was always like my family would always call me Donald, or because my father's name is Donald too, so they would always call me Lil D or DJ or something like that. But, you know, growing up in high school, I had a name, nickname that still sticks with me to this day. And you know, I won't mention it unless you say what was your nickname. But
is it Donnie or no?
No. So before, so I have a shaved head now, but back in high school, I just did some radical shit. Like one day I just shaved my head. So they said I looked like the wrestler King Kong Bundy. So that name Bundy stuck with me still to this day. Like if I could be walking down the street and somebody calls me Bundy, I know it's got to be somebody from high school. And that name even went to the military. So I had friends that was calling me that in the military. So a lot of my close high school friends, they'll still call me to this day. And, you know, I pick up the phone. They're like, Bundy, what's up, man? And I'm like, hey, what's going on?
So
they would call my house, like in high school, people would call the house. They're like, can we speak to Bundy? And they're like, who the hell is Bundy?
And y'all, this was Bundy, B-U-N-D-Y, I know what you're saying. Right. But it's almost like you can call yourself, instead of Bun B, you're Bun D.
Right, Bun D.
Well, that's interesting. Thank you, Don, for that. It makes us laugh. Well, thank you so much, Don. And you can find us, our podcast, pretty much anywhere podcasts are available. You know, if we're not on there, let us know. And you can follow us at Just Keep Spinning Podcast. Email us at justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. And don't stop digging and just keep spinning.
Thanks, guys.
Sounds great.
Back. Okay, really quick. So I don't care. This is going to be sloppy after edit because this is something important that I want to ask Don. Do you think, have you ever had a real Chicago dog here in Phoenix?
I have. And it's at Portillo's has one that's really good. And where was the other place? It's on 16th Street and Indian School. I think it's Luke's of Chicago.
Okay, I think I've seen that, yeah.
And it's another place called the original Chicago Hamburger Factory. It's on 32nd Street and I think Indian School, 35th.
I've seen them.
So yeah.
And then it's really quick. Go on really quick.
Go ahead. No, okay.
As far as pizza, so I remember one time we were having a conversation with you and De La, and I think we were talking about pizza for some reason. And mm-hmm. then Andrew and I were saying, like, well, you know, deep dish, like, it's cool, but we're not a big fan of it. And De La was like, it's just because you don't know better. So, right. Which was the best thing I ever heard. So, what would you say are some good pizza places here that you enjoy?
the place where De La is right now as we speak. She had just wrote, hold on, I'm showing you what she wrote. Because she was leaving out. So this is, I don't know if you can read that.
Luminati's.
Okay. I'm going to pick up a piece from Luminati. So,
she did write. She literally wrote that, guys.
So that's where she is right now as we speak. She was going to pick up a pizza from Luminati's. Luminati's got the best deep dish in the Phoenix area. So there's been a couple of restaurants that try to move out here. Giordano's, I think they came out here.
Okay, I was going to ask you about Giordano's. So what do you think, like, back home?
The one back home is amazing, but the one out here, it was like it just didn't taste right. But Luminati's has got it down to a science. So we stood online for maybe 2 hours when they first opened up. And we got in there, we talked with one of the owners. So he has a filter on his water system in there that kind of mimics the water from Lake Michigan. So you get that dough just right. Because the water out here is totally different. Back, you know, it tastes funny and everything.
It's super hard out here, the water,
yeah,
right?
It's super, 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 super hard. So he has a filter on his that gets the water to that right pH balance to give it that Chicago flavor. So
that's like New York people. Like, have you ever had NYPD pizza?
I have.
And it's they try to mimic the water there. Mm-hmm. So when they make it, yeah. So it's like New York water.
Yeah. I watched a show one time where there was a guy from New York and he went out to San Francisco and he had a bagel shop and he was trying to make the bagels and he couldn't get the water right. Everything tasted so bad. So what he ended up doing was he would have a truck like once a month or once a week or whatever, bring out New York water just for him, just to make his bagels.
That's
because it made that much of a difference.
And so when you say you see like a little cart, like that's selling hot dogs and they have the little umbrella and it's like Vienna, you know, and you go up to the cart and what do you how do you test them to know, like, maybe they're really in making Chicago dogs?
So the thing is, like, a good Chicago dog, you would tell them to run it through the garden.
And what does that mean?
It means everything on it. You want everything. The sports peppers. You want the mustard. You never get ketchup on a Chicago hot dog. Never. If you putting ketchup on a Chicago hot dog, you're not a Chicagoan. So it's always mustard, the really green relish. The sport pickles, the tomatoes, everything, the hot peppers. So you tell them if you're a real Chicagoan, you know, let me get a hot dog, run it through the garden.
Have you ever been out here and you rolled up to somebody and you told them that and they looked at you like you were crazy or they didn't know what you're talking about?
We went to, you know how they have First Fridays down right off Roosevelt?
Mm-hmm.
So we were down there one day and it was a guy, he had the Vienna sausage umbrella, everything, advertising Chicago dogs. And I told him that. I was like, I'm all right, running through the garden. He's like, what? I said, are you from Chicago? He's like, no, I'm not from Chicago. And then it turns out when I bit into the hot dog, it wasn't even like a real Vienna hot dog. It was just a regular beef hot dog. It wasn't Vienna. I'm like, man, get the fuck out of here with this.
So Portillo's uses real Viennas, right?
Portillo's, they had the real Polish sausages, the real beef hot dogs, the Italian beefs are great. My sisters flew in last weekend, so they live in Atlanta now. So they flew in from Atlanta, so they had a taste for Italian beef, so we just took in Portillo's last weekend.
And have you, I'm yep. sure you have.
And now that we got one out here, just
the one over here, like on McDowell, right?
Yeah, so it's closer to us. You know, we can jump right, since they got the new 202 over here, we can just jump on the 202 right to the 10 and be right there. So that's where we go now.
And the chocolate cake there is really good. But we kind of favor the one
a little bit better. Go ahead.
The chocolate cake there is really good too. It's super rich.
Yeah, it's super, super, super rich. I like the lemon cake when they have it. Sometimes that's better for me. I'm not a real big chocolate fan. My wife loves the chocolate cake, but I'll eat it, you know, because it's a Chicago style cake. But
and why do you think the one in Tempe, do you favor that one?
Because it's like your grandma's pots and pans have been seasoned. They've been used over and over and over again. So the one over here is still like brand new. So their pots and everything haven't been seasoned yet. You know, that one over there in Tempe, they've been there for a while. So everything's a little bit more greasier. So, yeah.
And what was the other question was going to be, you said the tamales, like you grew up eating tamales one way because of portillos and not like the traditional way that people here eat them, right?
Right. You know, I did, you know, coming out here, I was like, what the fuck is this? This is not a tamale. So so if you go to Portillo's, you get the Tom Tom tamales and they're wrapped in like these little, you know, it's a more, you know, blue collar way of eating a taco in the Midwest. You know, out here it's more authentic, but, you know, Chicago, we have the blue collar way. It's a little bit cheaper. And but it's, you know, I grew up on them. My grandfather used to love them. He used to go to the store and buy them by the bags. But coming out here and just tasting, you know, it's like for us, you know, coming out here. And I kind of equated to Chicago being a more blue collar town. And so they did more with food. You know, they seasoned it a little bit more different. So eating Mexican food in Chicago, it was like the best thing in the world. So when we moved out here, we was like, oh, man, we finna get some real authentic Mexican food. And
because you're so close.
Right. So we so used to Chicago stuff. When we got out here, it was like, you know, I'm telling the Mexican people, I said, this ain't Mexican food. This ain't real Mexican food.
You know why, Don? Because you have not ate my family's Uh-oh. Food. I'm going to tell you okay, that right
so,
now. Because...
All right, well, let's make a date then.
That, or I know some other people that can actually, other Mexican people that love to season their food. Because my family, my family, blue collar, all that thing. So yeah. I feel like with us, like food's super important. And like my family, their flavors are super rich. Like, you know, mm-hmm. and all of our family recipes, like on my side. So me and Andrew always, because we're both Mexican, you know, battle like who has the better this, who has the better that, mm-hmm. you know. So, but Andrew can make amazing red chili because he has roots in New Mexico, so you know, okay. New Mexico red chili, so he's the red chili king over here in this house, not me.
I get down. I can get down with some chili. That's about it though.
So what we need to do is just have like a potluck one day. You know, you guys bring over some stuff and I'll make my thing. You guys like ribs?
Oh yeah, we love like ribs.
So I got the best ribs in the world. We do this amazing cabbage on the grill that you have to taste. So we'll just have like a pot. Y'all bring something over and we'll make stuff and we'll just have a eat off and play some music.
There's actually a barbecue place that opened up not too far from where we live. And the husband and wife, I believe, are from Chicago.
Really?
Yeah. So they... We've got there and had the food and it's actually really, really good. Like the barbecue, because I'm super judgmental because I love flavor. Mm-hmm. But I'm mm-hmm. like, dang, there's actually flavor in this barbecue.
Taste My City, right?
Do you know the name of it?
Taste My City. That's what it's called.
Taste My City?
Mm-hmm.
I have to look it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will. Yep.
Well, and one more thing, Potbelly. That's a Chicago thing, right? The sandwich shop?
I don't think it's in Chicago. It might be. I didn't really mess with Potbelly in Chicago. And I think I might have only had it maybe once out here. It wasn't a big favorite of mine back in Chicago. So
tell Don why we never had Potbelly, even though it was here a long time.
Real quick, Potbelly. So the reason why we never had Potbelly here, Andrea just thought it was just like pork sandwiches. Because Potbelly, like Potbelly Pig. And so finally I got it. I was like, let's just go here and get a goddamn sandwich. I was just like, oh my gosh. This whole time I thought it was just pork sandwiches. I was like, no, it's not.
Right.
And poor yeah.
He was deprived for years. For years. Because of my ignorance.
Yeah. It's okay. I just never was a big, you know, like in Chicago, we have a thing for like hoagies. So we would have like these hoagie places, so you know, like Potbellies and what's the other one, Jimmy John's and all that kind of stuff. You know, they were okay, but to go into the hood and get like these hoagie sandwiches, they were so good, and so that's where we got our stuff from. So
that sounds good. So thank you for the food talk. That was really, that was really no important problem. To us. Thanks, Don.